This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
How about a little musical history here? I did not know that Sue was going to feature this in Sue's News. Actually, I didn't know the history and maybe take credit for this, but this is a significant day because this album, Van Halen 1, was released on this day when?
47 years ago in 1978.
Look at that. It was now or never. I was 13 years old. It was definitely one of the first records I ever purchased. You know, there was a handful of them that I brought here to St. Louis when I moved from the suburbs of Chicago, and I guarantee you that this was one of them, and I just happened to put that one in on the bumper rotation. You can always follow the bumper music and check out what it is at Mark Reardon KFTK. I publish that at the end of the show. We got TJ Moe coming up talking about the game and the pop culture elements of the game. Ethan just told me that 1.3 million people ditched after Kendrick Lamar. I would assume that it was a lot higher than that because it was a combination between the crappy Super Bowl show, halftime show, and the game.
Yeah, wouldn't the game was terrible.
Yeah, it was awful. Remember when this happened a couple years ago with Dylan Mulvaney?
This month I celebrated my day 365 of womanhood, and Bud Light sent me possibly the best gift ever, a can with my face on it.
Oh my. That was the start of the demise of Bud Light. And on Friday's show, before we took off for Super Bowl weekend, I read a portion of a piece that was in the Free Press on Friday by a guy by the name of Anson Ferricks, and he used to work at AB InBev. He was a top executive. He's got a book out that's coming out soon called The Last Call for Bud Light, the Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. Fred, the Hall of Famer, my executive producer, has tracked down Mr. Ferricks, and he joins us to tell his story, which I think is pretty important in the era of dismantling DEI. Hello, Anson. Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis. How are you?
Mark, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
You did spend a little time here. What was your era with the company? Was it after InBev took over or before that, or was there some crossover?
So it was after. I joined the company after InBev had taken over. But I think it was before the move to New York. So there was a time period where all the InBev folks were there, AB folks were there, all in St. Louis. So I was there from 2013 to 2015. My first son was born in St. Louis, lived in the Central West End. Know it very well, but it was really, you said the Dylan Mulvaney partnership was really kind of the start of the downfall of Bud Light. I mean, I trace it back further.
Yeah.
Some of the buyout with InBev, but even more so that move from St. Louis to New York where they took all their top execs and then changed out a lot of the historical kind of great talent that was based in St. Louis. That was really the downfall to me.
It's just so sad. And, you know, I have many friends that either worked at the brewery or with the brewery, you know, because there were a lot of folks here in St. Louis marketing, advertising that worked with AB for many, many years. And, you know, it just all peeled off. But outside of that, my apologies for it, is the book out? The new book is called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. Is it out now for available?
That's it. That's it. The book launched last week.
Awesome.
So we were in New York last week, had a lot of great media and a lot of interest in this subject because, yes, there was a partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, but there's also been this broader problem over the last, 10 years of DEI and ESG. That was really one of the main reasons that not only the partnership occurred, but then, as you recall, I mean, the company's response was just as damaging as the partnership itself, where they could neither sort of apologize to their loyal customers, just wanted Bud Light to get back to football and sports and music, you know, nor could they say that, okay, well, the company's gone the direction of Ben and Jerry's, and it's going to be involved in more political and social issues moving forward. So they were caught kind of in the middle of this cultural war. They tried to walk through the middle of it and ended up getting shot at it from both sides.
Well, and this is a perfect fit for this show because we've chronicled a lot of this. We've talked about it. A lot of the DEI ESG stuff is a theme that we constantly revisit on the show. But it's really important. One of the things that I did with your piece that was in the Free Press the other day, because I thought it was a great representation of what DEI really is. Other people have been trying to describe it out there. You really put it into very easy perspective for folks to understand. Now, I want to go back, though, to some definitions here because you mentioned ESG. I know what that is. The audience might not. But describe this situation that kind of goes back with this transformation. We know the name Carlos Brito here in St. Louis because he was the guy that kind of took over the helm. But things changed quite, you know, dramatically when he kind of left that position and things transformed into something very different in marketing in particular, right?
No, he did. And, you know, if you think about it, I mean, the St. Louis folks will know this, but the InBev folks came in. I mean, they cut a lot of the cost. And, you know, I you know, love Anheuser-Busch and you know, the Bush family with what they built over time. But you know, there was a point there was some excess. You know, they had 8 helicopters and 10 jets and
right.
SeaWorld and Busch Gardens, you know, all the things. So, you know, the InBev team, they came in and they you know, cut a lot of that excess. And that company was very good at buying companies and operating them more efficiently. The one thing they weren't very good at, though, was marketing and growing brands. And at some point after they bought Grupo Modelo and they bought SAB Miller, then all of a sudden they had to figure out, okay, we own all these brands globally. How are we going to grow them? And there was a board member, one of the Brazilian guys named Jorge Paulo Lehmann, who was kind of the controlling member. He said in 2017, 2018, this is his word, saying, I'm a scared dinosaur. I don't know how to deal with all this change and all the cultural change. And I don't really know how we're going to grow the company. And that was really like they really picked up ESG and DEI as essentially like the guidepost for how the company was going to grow. And ESG means environmental, social, governance. DEI is, of course, diversity, equity, inclusion. And that's sort of when this whole philosophy started creeping in. You know, I think that Carlos Brito didn't really like it, and that's one of the reasons he left the firm. But then Michel Doukeris was put in place as the head of the company in 2021. And he all of a sudden had ESG as his kind of like fourth pillar of the company.
Yeah, so you talk about Doukeris. So he's on this podcast in 2022 called Leadership Next. And you, in the piece, you know, and I explained this to the audience on Friday, you talked about how, you know, before that he had outlined goals for the company. And one of those goals was ESG. But then he says something that kind of catches the attention of this guy who's hosting the podcast, correct?
That's it, exactly. So he is talking a lot in the podcast about how he's wearing this, Michelle's wearing this pin for the UN sustainability goals and how we're much bigger than a beer company and we have to do all these kind of environmental and social and political things. And I mean, literally the host asked him, like, you know, hey, there's a lot of debate in that right now in the country on, you know, what's the purpose of a corporation? In the case of Anheuser-Busch Bud Light, should just make beer and great commercials and others, as kind of Milton Friedman said, is the purpose of a corporation, serve your shareholders. Or is it to serve all stakeholders? That's more this European World Economic Forum globalist view that businesses are supposed to serve all these other interests. And, you know, Michelle kind of took the latter and said, we're more ESG focused. We're doing a lot of things. And then the host asked, well, you know, that sounds kind of like, are you a woke CEO? And he essentially said, well, you know, that's to be judged. And,
And it has been. It has been, hasn't it? So, you know, I want to get to what happened with Dylan Mulvaney, but I think it's interesting to talk about the couple years before that, because in Anson Frericks is here and he's written a book about all this called The Last Call for Bud Light. You talk about how they, you know, introduced, and this is very illustrative, I think, to people who don't know much about DEI. They introduced the diversity dashboards and some of the other things that, you know, show the gender and makeup of each team. And you have goals that you have to set and all these things, right?
No, that's exactly it. And, you know, when I joined the company in the Carlos Brito era 10 years earlier, I mean, it was a meritocracy. It says we want to hire the best and brightest, and then you get judged based off your results. That was one of the things that was actually appealing to me at the time when I joined. And then in this kind of 2021, 2022, called the post-George Floyd era, then all these companies, I mean, raced to be essentially the, you know, most diverse and most equitable and most inclusive. And really that whole entire program, it became very controversial in corporate America. Now, Anheuser-Busch was introducing diversity dashboards, as you mentioned. And then they even changed one of the principles of the company away from being a meritocracy to basing you off of the diversity of your team. And that, you know, diversity was bolded and was made very clear that you would only get promoted if you had a certain number of folks that looked this way or, you know, kind of slept with that person, which is very different than what I than the company that I joined.
And Anson, then enter Alyssa Heinerscheid, because she became the focus 2 years ago. And that was, it was March of 2023 when Dylan, and I played the soundbite, got that package, right?
That was it. So it was March of 2023. And, you know, it was a very combustible time, you know, especially as it related to, you know, transgendered issues. I mean, you might recall that this is when you had 25 states that had ballot initiatives out there to ban biological men from competing against women in sports. You had a bunch of states that were trying to ban transgender affirmation care. So this was a very hot topic that was also the same week that you might remember there was a transgendered student that shot up a Christian school in Tennessee. So this was just a very, very kind of like combustible time period, and probably the worst time for Bud Light to do a partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, who had been at the Joe Biden White House over the past year, advocating for gender affirmation care and, you know, biological males compete in sports, and had documented this 365 days of girlhood, which was offensive to a lot of women as well. I mean, they couldn't have picked a worse person to send a can to celebrate a milestone.
But Alyssa was someone who had kind of bragged on another podcast that, you know, Bud Light is kind of fratty humor, we're moving away from that, right? And so she kind of puts her stamp on that to a certain extent when all this is happening. And then when the story comes out about Dylan, it really looks bad for Bud Light.
No, it really looked bad. So, of course, the Dylan partnership came out, and then a couple of days later, it came out that Alyssa had just been on this podcast a few days prior. To your point, talking about the Bud Light consumer was kind of fratty and out of touch, and that we needed to have this more diverse and more inclusive approach to marketing. And that's not what Bud Light needed. Bud Light just needed just better marketing.
But, Anson, you worked with her. You knew her, right?
I did. I knew Alyssa. And, I mean, Alyssa, like, I had a fine relationship with Alyssa, and I think she was she was fine dealing more with budgets, and she was somewhat reliable when she was doing more of the budgets. I was kind of surprised. I was not at Anheuser-Busch at the time when she did the partnership. I was surprised she got the Bud Light role. You know, when I actually left Anheuser-Busch in part because I tried to do a partnership with Black Rifle Coffee Company, that the same team that greenlit the Dylan Mulvaney advertisement would not allow me to do a partnership with Black Rifle Coffee Company, which kind of showed, you know, how far I think the company had kind of drifted from knowing its customer and knowing who it was. And even with Alyssa being put in place, a lot of people scratched their heads. And even I think there was a whole profile done on Alyssa, and even some of her friends thought it was comical that she was the head of Bud Light, since I don't know if she, you know, even knew anybody who ever drank Bud Light in their life, having grown up in New York City and attended Harvard and Wharton and had lived in New York most of her life.
So that it happens. This is so fascinating. And I know that the audience is loving this because this is so relatable to St. Louis. Anson Frerichs is here, and he's written a book about all this called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and the Future of America's Favorite Beer. That thing comes out. You have podcasters, television hosts, radio hosts like me all over the country, Twitter, you name it, highlighting this. And Kid Rock blows things up. Everyone's against Bud Light. Their sales plummet in a very short time.
Yeah, so sales plummet immediately when people see this. And of course, Kid Rock lights up the Bud Light, and Travis Tritt kicks him off the country music band. And there's all types of memes out there. And I think what was like most telling about Anheuser-Busch's adoption of ESG and DEI is their response. And their response they had was equally as bad and equally as problematic as the partnership itself. You know, at first they released some PR statement saying how, you know, hey, occasionally we send milestones to people to celebrate important, you know, times in their lives. And people were kind of convinced or kind of confused by that. And then they went dark for about 2 weeks. The sales plummeted 10%, 20%, 30%. And then 2 weeks later, they issued letter to America. And the problem with it was, is that it neither acknowledged that there was what the situation was, why there was a problem. They didn't apologize to their loyal customer base for getting involved in this issue, nor again did they say that Bud Light was going to be Ben and Jerry's. They kind of just took this middle approach. And I don't know, I'm a fan of history. I like Teddy Roosevelt. He always said that, you know, when you're faced with a difficult situation, the best decision is the right one. The second best is the wrong one. And the worst decision is the no response at all or no decision at all. And that's kind of the approach they took, and they've still taken. And sales continue to be down and dwindling because the company hasn't gotten a hold of the situation, and they can do all the great commercials they want with Shane Gillis and Peyton Manning. But I just don't see the brand coming back with the current leadership and even the current ownership in place, given that they haven't been able to get a hold of this situation for years.
Let's talk about the ad, because in, you know, when I read this on Friday, I don't know how this comes out in the book, but the article said, as you enjoy the Super Bowl, pay attention to that ad. And we had kind of talked about the Shane Gillis Post Malone ad. We played a little bit of the audio when it came out a couple of weeks ago, and then you get to see the thing yesterday. But one of the things in your message was, look, the message is Bud Light is fun, Bud Light is for guys, but Bud Light is really, really, really sorry. I'm not sure that that was properly conveyed to the audience, but that was certainly part of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely part of it because, you know, initially, so the CEO of North America is a guy named Brendan Whitworth, and he kind of, in my mind, struck out when he had that first chance 2 weeks after the partnership to apologize, take control of it, didn't. He did a month later, he had a second opportunity where, again, he neither acknowledged the situation they were in, why they were in it, made any apology. And then he had his third opportunity going into 4th of July weekend, which is the biggest beer-selling weekend of the year, in June of 2023, where he was on CBS. And he went on there, and the host said, hey, first, thanks for coming on, because most CEOs would be running for the hills. But, you know, I just want to give you an opportunity to, your, since your sales are dwindling, you know, knowing what you know now, was this partnership a mistake? And would you do it again? And he gave some really waffling no answer to it. And the host came back and said, hey, just so you realize, like, the reason you're in the situation you're in is because of the response you just gave.
Yeah.
And let me ask again, you know, was this a mistake? Would you do it again? Again, gave some evasive, you know, answer. And sales continued to plummet. And so that was kind of a third strike, you're out. And they've tried to do everything they can to get sales back, of giving $100 million to Ultimate Fighting Championship and Dana White, hiring Shane Gillis, Peyton Manning, and sales continue to decline and plummet. And that's the problem for me. I mean, I still own shares of the company. The investment management firm I started, we own shares of the company. And there's a zero accountability, which is just crazy still 2 years later.
I love this line, Anthony. You said, look, millions of Americans just didn't want their choice in beer to be political, not pro-trans, not anti-trans, not any trans, right? Is it that hard? It doesn't seem to be that hard.
It wasn't that hard when, you know, Bud Light was based in St. Louis and became the biggest beer brand in America, particularly because it stayed out of politics. I mean, it was enjoyed. If you looked at all the demographic data we have on who drank Bud Light, it was equally enjoyed by Democrats and Republicans, blacks, whites, gays, straights, and everybody liked Bud Light because it was all about doing things that brought people together. It was about sports and music and humor and fun, and that was the appeal of Bud Light. It was like the inoffensive appeal. So they didn't need to be more, you know, diverse and inclusive as Alyssa wanted to go. It just needed to be fun, and that's what Bud Light was, and that's what it got lost in when all of a sudden it got involved with very politicized influencers.
One of the things that kind of surprises me about not reacting a little bit more maybe appropriately in this situation is, as you probably know better than anyone, look, when there's bad negative stuff out there, the distributors really hear from it, right? Because the distributors hear it from the bars and from the stores, and I think that message was sent pretty loud and clear, especially from the middle part of this country.
It was. And if you think about all these distributors, I mean, these are family-owned businesses. They're in every county across the country, and they're really loyal Anheuser-Busch wholesalers. I mean, most of them have names like, you know, Eagle Distributing, Double Eagle. There's even a Tri-Eagle, a Triple Eagle Distributing.
That's right, yeah.
Across the country. And they had 80 plus 90% of their revenue tied to Anheuser-Busch. And when Bud Light, their number one brand, lost 30-plus percent of its sales, I mean, 40% in certain areas, especially in the heartland, and Budweiser dropped and Nick Ultra and everything else, I mean, a lot of these people had to lay off longtime employees, and a lot of them had to cut some of the resources. So it was terrible. And then a lot of people at Anheuser-Busch ended up getting fired. Suppliers went out of business. I mean, this was just a textbook example of what goes wrong when businesses try to be social justice enterprises, because it's the least sustainable thing a company can do.
And
your customer base.
It pains me to bring up this as an example, but don't you think that Jaguar is in the process of doing the same thing? Did you see their little pink car deal from a couple of months ago?
Yeah, no, I saw that from a couple of months ago as well. I mean, I think probably the one difference is, like, you know, I don't think anyone bought Jaguars to begin with, and, you know, at least the folks I know, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
the one. I'm the only guy, unfortunately. And I felt I don't like to admit it because it's pretentious, but I have an F-Pace. I really love the vehicle. I've had two of them. And honestly, when that happened, you know, and those of us who still, because it's a beautiful car, it's a fast car, but when that happened, I felt like I lost like $15,000 right off the top because they did something that idiotic.
No, I mean, you're right, because Jaguar, to your point, like, I mean, it was like a very cool, sleek, sexy car, And then, I mean, they didn't need to put out some just like, you know, strange ad with a bunch of androgynous people kind of walking around. It was just strange.
Bizarre.
Just like,
bizarre. I don't get it at all. And said, hey, listen, you're a fantastic guest. Not everyone who writes a book is a good guest on the radio, but this was awesome. Last call for Bud Light, the fall and the future of America's favorite beer. If you ever get back to St. Louis, come see us. And I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That was outstanding.
Yeah.
I love it. And really good storytelling and very, very, you know, relevant to St. Louis. So buy the book, check it out. I did put that piece from the Free Press up on the Twitter, the ex formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon, KFTK. We got TJ Moe coming up next.
Get more at 971talk.com.